That's why they call it the chair. Try to look down on the other side. See, we're looking for Wasserberger, Cooper. Rothfuss is there. And Meyer. Okay, Cooper is excused. All right, I think that let's go ahead and do roll call.
Roll call for Friday, February 20th. Anderson District 2?
Here.
Anderson District 28?
Here.
Barnard?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Present.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper? Excused?
Here.
There we go.
Kraft?
Not today.
Dockstetter?
Schust.
Driscoll?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Escobel?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Hicks?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Kinski?
Here.
Landon? Meyer?
Here.
Pappas?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Fladern,
here.
Wasserberger,
here.
President Nicholas.
Here.
27 present, 3 excused.
Well, we're blessed to have Father Dickey back with us this morning, and he brought his son Joseph to make sure that his dad is doing the right things. He'll be there. Here he is. There's Joseph. Yeah. So Father Dickey will lead us with the prayer, and I think we've asked him to give us another fighting chant, even though we probably don't need it today. Join us with the prayer. Well, let me get you the microphone. Now we're good.
All right. Tiper macho stratiota niki tiria os litrothisa ton inon ευχαριστρία. Αναγράφος υπό Ιησού Θεοτόκε, άλλος έχουσα το κράτος απροσμάητον, εκ πανίων με κινήνων ελευθερσόν, in a crasosi here nymphi animfefte. To you the champion leader and defender of this city, we your servants inscribe anthems to you as one rescued from sufferings, O Theotokos, but as you are invincible from all dangers that may threaten me, deliver me, that I may cry to you, hail to you, O bride unwedded.
Through the prayers of our holy fathers, Lord Jesus Christ, our God, have mercy on us and save us. Amen. May God bless you. Rejoice in all circumstances. Pray unceasingly and give thanks to God in Christ Jesus, for that is His will for us always. I want to thank you all for doing what you do for Wyoming and for my parish and for my family. So, thank God.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Father and Joseph, we really appreciate your being here this week. Joseph, just for the day. We do would like to give you these coins just as a memory and as a token of our appreciation. We appreciate your being here, and we appreciate your sharing your dad with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Father.
The doctor of the day is Jasper Chen, M.D. The nurse of the day is Deb Lukeman from Campbell County Memorial Hospital. In 1923, the legislature experienced a 56-hour day in a questionable legislative trick designed to keep the clock from winding up on the session. This trick has been repeated since then, but this was the longest one on the record. We had a similar experience yesterday. The software actually exploded, and the names Hicks and Driscoll are no longer in the software program. This is the 27th day of a proposed 37-day session. Folks, next Friday, February 27th, is the last day for bills to be reported out of the committee of the second house. We do have messages from, what have we got?
The journal.
What have you been doing over there? All right, with the... reading clerk, please read the Journal Committee report.
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 19th, 2015, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, Chamber. A chairman.
Let me just call that without objection. Were you objecting to Wasserberger's report?
No.
Would you like to?
I would like to, but I'm saving that for another day, Mr.
Okay, well, you've heard the report. Without objections, the report is adopted. Back to you, Majority Floor Leader Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, it was a little late last night. I want to compliment all the senators for their debate and the love they have for Wyoming and how they conducted themselves. But I also, Mr. President, wanted to recognize the hard work of our Senate Appropriations Committee, and I think we ought to give them a standing ovation as well as their staff. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And, Mr. President, along that same line, I've asked the chairman of the Appropriations Committee to show me where his tailor is so I can get one of those suits that'll fit me. And, Mr. President, you all have on your desk, you should have had in the last couple of days, a red sheet about whether or not you want to have written information or you want it online. Very few of you turned it in. I'm assuming that's because you want it online rather than the written. I wanted to make that announcement. The other thing, too, Mr. President, is that interim topics for your committee chairman, it's on your desk. Be thinking about that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, I'm thinking about Mr. Majority Floor Leader Bebout. One of the options that was not given to us on that is so we had the option of having it online or paper, but we did not get the option of just having them download everything onto a thumb drive. so you could load it on. And the difference is obviously now you got to double click, get the bill, pull it down. But one of the questions I'd like to ask the staff is whether or not you could just get the thumb drive and get the thumb drive and just load it in, and it's all there without having to load each item.
Mr. President, I think that can be arranged.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I just want to inform the body that last night as I was leaving and heeding the warning of the appropriations chairman that he has people, as I pulled out of the underground, there was a black car pulled off the street corner and followed me all the way home. And as I got out all the way out onto Yellowstone out where I'm staying, and I just getting ready to turn, it finally passed me, and there was this elderly Italian woman in there. So the fact is he does have people, Mr. President.
Well, that could be, but they must, you returned today, so they must be inept. I see that the doctor today, Dr. Chen, is here. If you'd all give him a warm welcome. Dr. Chen is a practitioner here in Cheyenne. All right, I think we're at that order of business of messages from the House.
February the 19th, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 316, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. In accordance with the Joint Rule 14-1, the bill is not engrossed and the adopted House amendments are being transmitted with the bill. House Bill Number 1, General Government Appropriations 2, Ayes 41, Noes 18, Excused 1, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 19th, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural State Public Lands and Water Resources, who once referred House Joint Resolution 6, engrossed Wyoming local food production, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstetter, Emmerich, and Guy, Senator Emmerich, Vice Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 139, engrossed Unemployment Compensation Protest Times Limit. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 138, engrossed, Workers' Compensation for Special Education Teachers. Reports back with a with the recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
We have bills on first reading. Surprised. Oh, I thought something, a flag came off one of them. We have two. Oh, I see what you're saying. I got you. House Bill 1, being first reading of the bill. House Bill 1. Here we go.
House Bill Number 1, General Government Appropriations 2, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee.
House Bill 1 is assigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Second. House bill on second reading. House Bill 15, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 15, restoration of voting rights by Department of Corrections.
We have an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 15, second reading, amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 2.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this is a bill on restoration of voting rights for nonviolent felons, and the amendment brings you a policy decision of not taking this system quite as far as the bill does. What it does is restore the piece of the current statute that has a 5-year waiting period. Waiting period commences with completion of the sentence or, in the most common case, with the completion of parole, so they aren't eligible to get their voting rights restored until 5 years after that. Mr. President, I think that's wise. I think you need a bit of a period where they've gotten reintegrated in society. We make sure that they in fact do not reoffend. So it slows the process down a little bit, but you still will get the voting rights restored in a reasonable period. And I think a 5-year waiting period is not out of line. The rest of the change that does that is the very last item in the amendment, the page 10, line 9 reference. The rest of the bill is language conforming so that the system works, given that 5-year period is coming in. And, Mr. President, I urge adoption of the amendment. I believe I moved the amendment. If I didn't, I do.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment. And my curiosity about this is what we're waiting to have happen or what we're worried about in that 5-year period. You know, 5 more years of what is effectively additional punishment is what it comes down to. So the concept is that the sentence has been served, it's been declared completed, but from a voting rights standpoint, there needs to somehow be 5 more years of punishment. And, Mr. President, I just don't see the danger. I don't know what the downside to having them vote after they've theoretically served their time, paid their penance to society, and are back in public. I don't know what the danger to the rest of society is to allow them to cast a vote as a member of our public, as a citizen of Wyoming, even the first day thereafter. A lot of states never take away the right in the first place, and somehow they manage to continue to struggle through. It is a policy decision, as my good friend from Natrona County said, but in my view, it's a policy decision that we should resist. We should stick with the way that it's currently written on and against the amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the proponents of this amendment, the reason we talked about this a little bit the other day, and I'll be brief. As we look at this, the concept that is trying to be dealt with in this bill is that the faster and the more efficiently you can reintegrate individuals back into society after they've been incarcerated, the better it is in the likelihood of recidivism. The organization that done this has done some work, and the logic is that ultimately Wyoming has the highest incarceration rate in the country per capita basis, and yet we still have the highest success rate of non-recidivism. We have the highest success rate in our corrections department, or how we deal with things here, the highest success rate of individuals not returning to prison when they get out. Mr. Chairman, recently our Department of Corrections was awarded the Golden Eagle Award, I think is what it was called, for being having 100%. They received 100% in a recent review on all their audits of programs and finances and how they deal with the prisoners. It was one of only 15 states that had had this highest award and were recognized as such. We have a great institution. When we do this, I'm struggling with the concept that somehow that individuals who get out of prison, if they get their voting rights back, are automatically better citizens. The testimony, I think, or the information was further that only about 5% or less of these individuals ever exercise that right. And so the concept is, why does that hurt? What the other side of that coin is I don't understand how it helps. If only 5% of them actually do that, I don't understand how it helps. This is an important right. It's not the only right they can't do. If that's punishment, we have people, even after they've paid their debt to society, will continue to be listed on the sex offender registry. They continue to unable to bear firearms. There's lots of things that happen and lots of consequences for committing felonies in our country. This still provides an automatic way, but it just says that there should be a period where you find out if the likelihood of their succeeding. If you don't like the 5 years, you could reduce that. But ultimately, it seems to me appropriate there be some period where they have an opportunity to prove themselves before they get back the rights that they give up when they committed the crime. Thank you, Mr. President.
On the amendment, Senator Von Flatern.
Green light over here.
There you go.
Thank you. On the amendment, and I'm speaking against it, from what I can read real quickly on the repealer that is deleted in the amendment, repealed by the amendment still puts the Board of Parole in this, and they were trying to get out of this through probation or having the Department of Correction handle it all, and we removed parole in a couple of spots in the bill through some amendments earlier by the Standing Committee, and I believe the repealer that is repealed, so it's back in, does deal with the Board of Parole, and I need to be corrected on that. And I haven't been able to get to the other H section yet, this 13402H, but if I have that correct, that may reinstitute the 5 years. I guess that's a question, because I'm trying to figure out where the 5-year wait period comes in. But I think this really damages the bill, and I'd ask for you no vote on it.
Discussion on the amendment before Senator Perkins.
I'm having trouble pulling it up on my computer, but I think 713-105-B3, that's how you get the 5 years back in, Mr. President. It doesn't bring the board back in. It simply reinstates one of the three requirements, two of which are in the bill. The third one, by repealing it, puts the third requirement back in, which is the 5-year waiting period. I do not believe that it brings back in the Board of Parole. Thank you, Mr. President.
Any further discussion before the sponsor takes it a second time? Sponsors waived it. All those in favor of second reading number one? Oh, he is, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, the repealer, which is eliminated, which is 713-105-B3i, does not mention the Board of Parole. It says it has been at least 5 years since the expiration of all the applicant's terms of sentence, or in case of probation, the completion of all probation periods. So there's no administrative role for the Board for the probation parole people coming back in. So it does not have that effect. If there's something else in here that does, and I didn't find it, we could correct that in third, but I don't think there is anything. It really is a policy decision. The question, Mr. President, was what harm does it do? You have two problems that may come up. One is just plain recidivism during that 5-year period. And second, it's been my feeling that if corrections and particularly probation parole do their jobs properly, they will be strict with these probationers, you got to stay on the straight and narrow. And I think that's better for the probationer. But they may come off that period mad at the system and be then with the bill, a voter directing their anger at the probation system, trying to influence us against some of the things they do. Whereas I think if you've had 5 years, you get a better perspective. The inmate gets a better perspective of what happened and how that actually helped him if they did a good job. And I think you won't have some of the pressures that you might otherwise get. So I think it's worth having a 5 year period. It is a policy decision. The world won't come to an end either way, but I think we'll have a better system if you adopt the amendment.
The question is on second reading, amendment number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has been adopted. Back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Roll call. Don't you want to do roll call? Had enough of those yesterday? House Bill 15, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Now let's do 3rd reading. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
We do. The consent list, the Senate consent list for today is as follows. House Bill 17, Sexual Assault Protection Orders. House Bill 21, Intestate Succession, Adopted Children. House Bill 27, NRC Agreement State Authorization. House Bill 30, Deposits and Depositories. House Bill 36, not suppositories, depositories, Mr. President. House Bill 36, Emergency 9/11 Providers Immunity. House Bill 37, Telephone Assistance Program Repeal. House Bill 42, Unclaimed Property Merchant Stored Value Cards. House Bill 51, Excise Tax Well Site. House Bill 52, Sales Tax Exclusion Related Business Entities. House Bill 53, Minerals to Value Added Products Program. House Bill 54, Corrective Action Account Distribution. House Bill 55, Solid Waste Program Amendments. House Bill 63, Unclaimed Property Advertising. House Bill 82, Brewery and Microbrewery Licenses Definition. House Bill 111, Resort Liquor Licenses. House Bill 113, Cigarette Certification. House Bill 136, Interstate Game Tag Exemption Meat Processors. House Bill 154, Complementary Hunting License Persons with Disabilities. And House Bill 155, Hunters Who Use Wheelchairs Donated Licenses.
Would any of the members like to have any of those bills removed from the list? Senator Case.
President, House Bill 53, Minerals to Value-Added Products Program.
House Bill 53 has been removed from the list. Any other requests? Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 17, Sexual Assault Protection Orders. House Bill 21, Intestate Succession Adopted Children. House Bill 27, NRC Agreement State Authorization. House Bill 30, Deposits and Depositories. House Bill 36, Emergency 9/11 Providers Immunity. House Bill 37, Telephone Assistance Program Repeal. House Bill 42, Unclaimed Property Merchant Stored Value Card. House Bill 51, Excise Tax Well Site. House Bill 52, Sales Tax Exclusions Related Business Entities. House Bill 54, Creation Corrective Action Account Distribution. House Bill 55, Solid Waste Program Amendments. House Bill 63, Unclaimed Property Advertising. House Bill 82, Brewery and Microbrewery Licenses Definition. House Bill 111, Resort Liquor License. House Bill 113, Cigarette Certification. House Bill 136, Interstate Game Tag Exemption Meat Processors. House Bill 154, Complementary Hunting Licenses, Persons with Disabilities. House Bill 155, Hunters Who Use Wheelchairs, Donated Licenses. If the Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
On the consent list, Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper's excused. Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer excused. Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Fladeren.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Cooper, aye. On the Meyer excused. On the consent list, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 17. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 17. 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 21, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 21, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 27, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 27, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 30. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 30, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 36, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 36, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 37, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 37, 29 ayes, 1 excused. House Bill 42, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 42, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 51, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 51, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 52, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 52, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 54, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 54, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 55, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 55, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 63, are there any changes? Dockstetter, I don't know. Barnard, I don't know. Landon, I don't know. Perkins, I don't know. Bebout, I don't know. Wasserberger, I don't know. Driscoll, I don't know. Cooper, I don't know. Closing boat. Closing boat closed. House Bill 63, 21 aye, 8 no, 1 excused. House Bill 82, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 82, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 111, are there any changes? Geis, I don't know. Case, I to know. Barnard, I don't know. Perkins, I don't know. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 111, 25 aye, 4 no, 1 excused. House Bill 113, are there any changes? Case, I to know. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 113, 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused. House Bill 136, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 136, 28 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 154, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 154, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 155, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 155, 29 aye, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bills 17, 21, 27, 30, 36, 37, 42, 51, 52, 54, 55, 63, 82, 111, 113, 136, 154, and 155 have passed the Senate. House Bill 53, third reading of the bill.
House Bill number 53, Minerals to Value Added Products Program, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd like us to think a little bit about this. We had some discussion about it on general file, and this is a big step, Mr. President, to think that we would go into this business, in essence, be either a supply partner, financing guarantee or guarantor in a value-added processing facility. Now, these could be all kinds of different facilities. You can imagine. For example, an oil refinery. That would not be excluded by this, but that's obviously an area where private sector seems to have plants in Wyoming. They do well. They've added to those plants. They haven't located new ones, so I doubt if we'll be jumping into that business, but I guess we could. The discussion the other day was largely about a natural gas to a liquids plant, probably diesel fuel. And that's, I suppose, most likely. That seems to be what a lot of people talk about. There's not one of those commercially operating anywhere that I'm aware of successfully, certainly not in the United States. There was a reference to another plant in the United States that's located in North Dakota, and that was a successful operation. I would challenge you to look at the success of that plant. It was an experimental plant, started, it's a very large-scale coal to natural gas plant, and it's quite well known. It is located near Beulah, North Dakota, and it has had a good operational history, Mr. Chairman, but it has never come close to paying off the original $2.1 billion that the United States government invested in it. It's been a great platform for some experimental processes. It does take coal and convert it into natural gas, which we have, if you ever notice, there's kind of a lot of natural gas around now, but it was constructed at a time where people thought there was going to be a shortage of natural gas and that this would make sense. And it never really has made sense, but it does sort of work because no one's ever had to really pay back the original $2.1 billion, and it has provided an opportunity to test other things. It's been a platform for the largest CO2 sequestration project in North America, which I think is, you know, that's a worthwhile endeavor. But to say that that is a successful plant is just not true when you look from the beginning to end. I'm suggesting that this is far beyond the proper role of government and the proper role of Wyoming in our future. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to address the viability and the possibility for success. There are numerous successful operations around the world in gas to liquids and coal to liquids. Many coal to liquids have been operating for 50-plus years successfully, are economically viable, and have been for quite some time. There are two facilities that are gas to liquids that were built within the last 6 or 7 years. One of those facilities had a price tag of over $20 billion. It was built in a country in the Middle East, and it had a payback period estimated between 4 and 5 years. So you made your $20 billion back in 5 years on that project. That's not a bad little gig if you can get it. So as far as economic viability, it's a project-by-project consideration. This legislation requires project-by-project consideration. The economic viability would have to be demonstrated. And because of the structure of this particular piece of legislation and the way that it requires a tolling agreement, the entire facility is built before the first Wyoming dollar is spent. So that economic viability not only gets tested in the beginning prior to the initial contract, but then the capital has to be in place to construct the entire facility. You have the facility on the ground, ready to operate, then the switch is flipped. And some of Wyoming capital, up to 20% of the production at that time, depending on the contract, once again, for some period of time, comes into play. Again, Mr. President, I would reiterate the fact that there would be a specific and finite amount of appropriated dollars that would potentially be at risk under one of these types of agreements. The exposure is limited to whatever that appropriation is, and that appropriation requires action by this body to put the money to play, requires approval by the Wyoming Business Council, approval by the Attorney General of the constitutionality and appropriateness of any contract that's put in place, as well as approval by the SLIP. So this would not be the end of the conversation, Mr. President. In fact, this is the beginning of the conversation. I do appreciate all of the concerns. I certainly hope to see that if we have a project go forward in this, that it would be doing so with very beneficial and positive possibilities in place for whatever that mineral upgraded value-added approach would be. There's a lot of possibilities, as my good friend from Lander noted. We don't know what that's going to be right now, but there's a lot of hope and a lot of possibility. And to the extent that we do, as a body, need to find ways to diversify our economy, this is one of those ways. This helps us down that pathway. And, Mr. President, we've struggled for the last several years trying to come up with things that actually could viably diversify the Wyoming economy,
and we've had a difficult time of it. We haven't made huge successes along that pathway. This is trying to put another tool in that toolbox. It might not be effective, but it might. And in the possibility that it is, it's certainly worth exploring this opportunity, trying to work with industry, trying to find ways to make Wyoming the most appealing place to do these types of processes, and recognizing that we have vast mineral wealth in the state, we can add value to that wealth, and we can bring value to the state of Wyoming.
James Anderson. Excuse me, I meant to say Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know the expression, timing is everything. Well, it may not be everything, but I will just tell you from a practical sense, and I'm not going to, I think it's been well spoken to in regard to the economic side. I think it's been spoken to pretty well from the economic side. But for the last year and ongoing, this conversation has been engaged in my community. We have in place wet natural gas with a plant just recently opened, $100 million. Pipelines in place to reach those wells that are producing not only petroleum, but wet natural gas. We have railroads running through with ample water out of the Powder River Basin with coal. So we have really opportunity in actually four areas, discussion in how we can add value to natural gas, the products coming off of wet natural gas, petroleum products, coal, and also within our community, uranium, in regard to what we can do in regard to processing yellowcake in more concentrated forms. Timing being everything, we see the opportunity for benefit in a downturn, and I've spoken some about this already on the floor in regard to the down economy and BTU fuel economies. Well, in the lack of demand of those fuel economies, then there must be an attraction for those other added value products. Now, we'll do this as much as we can on our own. We, as community leaders, will go out and solicit those people that are willing to invest and do so profitably, we hope. But the assistance that we can get in regard to strategic planning and that from the Business Council, we've had those conversations, is invaluable. But we see this downturn as opportunity, not only as opportunity, but it necessitates that we go out and find other ways to market those products that we have in hand. And I won't go on and on and on in regard to the opportunities, but if you've ever seen one of these value trees, it's absolutely mind-boggling in what you can do with it, with carbon-based molecules. So what we're going to do is try to narrow it down to a niche, nothing like the Heartland project that we saw in Canada. We don't need that. We don't want that. But we want to look for those select opportunities. Those select opportunities that we intend on pursuing, number one, ammonia. And ammonia then has its own value tree. One of those value tree items of ammonia is ammonium fertilizer. We'll look for that. We'll look for opportunities to produce that, to market that. The other being, and there's a whole array of plastics. Now, we're not just talking about rubber ducks and beach balls and things like that, but we're talking about plastics that can be marketed to China and other places. Go on and on and on in regard to the opportunities. I would just hope, given the time that we're in, timing being everything, looking into the future, looking in the possibility of a downturn, of local communities that have these opportunities to participate along with the state to develop new markets, new products, new jobs. I would hope that you would give this your most favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
For the discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, rising on and against the bill. Mr. President, I know the sort of intuitive appeal that these value-added projects have. And people say, okay, that makes sense developing our economy. And there's a number of things we can do, Mr. President, that I think are useful and legitimate in this area. Reducing government regulatory burdens, which I think was one of the main reasons that Canadian project was so successful. They were in a much better regulatory environment with their federal government than we are with ours. You can do things like that up there. And making sure that we have infrastructure, making sure that we have a well-educated workforce, all of those things are helpful. And some of the research, some of the things our university does, are helpful in developing value added. But when it comes to building large-scale plants, making major economic investments, I will say to you that I believe in the free enterprise system. I think the free enterprise system, where private individuals, private companies, put their own capital at risk, does a far better job of allocating our economic resources as a society than does government, where political considerations necessarily get in the way. And I think it's healthier for our economy as a whole if we rely on free private enterprise to make these investments. And I will say to the Senate, on a practical matter, I've seen some of these as individual projects, some that we financed. And the reason they came to the government was they were not viable and could not get private financing. And sure enough, when we put the money in, project was not viable. I can think of a notable one back in our history that we had to pay quite a bit back into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, because it went belly up and it didn't work. Mr. President, your government, your legislature, is not designed to make private investment decisions. The private enterprise system is, and we ought to leave that kind of decision making to free private enterprise and keep the government out of it.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and in favor of the bill, and I appreciate the comments from my good tall senator from Natrona County. But quite frankly, Mr. President, if that had been the attitude of Wyoming over the last 20, 30, 40 years, we'd be in much worse shape than we are today, and history has a way of repeating itself. And I go back and I would share with the body the decision made by the state of Wyoming with the leadership of the then governor to get involved with power plants and to add value to our coal. And one only has to see the tremendous value of that, the transmission lines, the percentage of electricity that's passed out of Wyoming in terms of electrons rather than coal. And now we're seeing other fruits of that benefit with the data centers. And one of the reasons they come to Wyoming is because of cost electricity. So you can go back to what we did back then. And so what did the state of Wyoming do to enhance that and to not get involved in the private sector, to take a position that the state should have, and that was with the pollution control exemptions. You know, the state stepped up and said, okay, if you're going to do that, we're going to give you some exemptions, created the opportunity for those private sector people to come into Wyoming, invest millions and millions and millions of dollars, and look at the benefits we derived from that. Another example is we refer to as the Kern River, where Wyoming had tremendous gas that was shut in. This was in the late 80s, early 90s, and we knew there were markets out there. We did not have the infrastructure to get that product to the markets. So the state of Wyoming stepped up and put in place the bonds. The bonds were never implemented, but the fact that Wyoming was willing to do it got the private sector to step up and do what they did, and now that's all history. And, of course, if you look at the great boom that happened in Wyoming with our natural gas, it's primarily because we had a way to take away that natural gas and get it to the markets. You could talk about our trona and soda ash business. You know, we've added value to that with a big major plant down in Green River. Part of that is the underground exemptions we did to mining equipment. Once again, we stepped up, put that in place, and allowed that to go forward. So this is another example. This is different. Things have changed today in how we do things. And when you look at these NGL plants, one of the major parts of that is a predictable source of feedstock for it at a price that they can take to their bank and be able to do the financing. This makes good sense. The protections are in place. My colleague from Albany County said it very well. The state's protected. We provide the opportunity. This makes a lot of sense. Wyoming is doing what it should within the frame of allowing the private sector to go forward, yet be there to support it in the way we can. I ask you to support the bill.
Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I wish somebody would help me out on this bill. My first concern on this that I was wondering when I was hearing the presentation on this is we're not going to put any money in until the plant itself is built. So I'm trying to figure out why we need this legislation now. Because this is basically generalized legislation. If we've got a partner or partners who approach us and want to build a plant and want the state in on it, we can, with the amount of time for in terms of permitting and that it takes to build a plant, we can bring specialized legislation that fits that criteria better. I've got a problem. In addition, I was just reminded of it from the majority floor leader's speech. When it comes to something like the business council and the fact that they're the ones we're putting that decision in their hands, and in some cases that should be the case. The good senator from Glen Rock was talking about using some of our resources, and we have all that stuff. And some of the stuff we have is fairly unique, like Trona. And one of the things that our good friend, Senator Schiffer, always mentioned on this on the floor here was helium. We produce more helium than anybody in the world, and that is an increasingly rare commodity in the world. That is would be something that would be great for this. However, we're putting the cart before the horse on this. And I was reminded from the majority floor leader's speech that one of my constituents was down here expressing a concern because they have a data center. We have a data center up in Sheridan that was purely private investment. Yet the business council went and put money to build a data center over on the western side of the state, it, frankly, in a geologically active area, which surprised me, which directly competes with the one up in our part of the country. Are we actually giving the business council more authority to pick winners and losers? And is that what we want the business council to be doing? As I said, if we're not going to be putting money into this thing until the plant is already built, we don't need this legislation now. And, in fact, this legislation may need to be adjusted to meet whatever the criteria is for some future project. So I'm trying to understand why we need this.
Senator Fonfletter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Remember, folks, this is just a program bill. This bill sets up a program within the Business Council, which is then first recommendation is from the governor to the Business Council to the SLIB board, who decides whether or not they deserve any kind of money. The Attorney General steps in and looks at the contract, decides whether it's legal or not. So this, and I can say the reason that it needs to be created today for a project no doubt will be 7 years out minimally is because somebody needs to keep an eye on the project from our point of view, which should be the Business Council. They'll work it and watch it and all 7 years of permitting process. If anybody even applies for this, we have no money in this. We will never give any money in this. Comes back to the legislature for final appropriation of any money, at which time we would understand that contract inside and out at that point. But at this point, all we're doing is setting up a program and allowing them to watch or have people apply, and then we'd watch their progress, and then they'd be back in front of us. And if it's not legal, the AG will hopefully say so. If not, this body will be saying so.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. You know, I think what was just said is really illustrates what we're trying to attempting to do in our community. I live near a large power plant. It's been operating almost 60 years, over 200 employees over that length of time, where a group of businessmen in that small community realized that their community was dying. They got together, paid their own way, bought their own plane tickets, maybe train tickets at that time, went to Oregon and recruited a power plant to come there, and that saved that town. The revenues off of that plant paid my salary as a teacher for 30 years. They had the insight in order to do that. So what I'm asking, the opportunity that I seek on the part of my community out of this is expertise in the form of three things. Come, business council and other state resources, and do three things for us. Educate, educate, educate. Then we will then, through the education regarding the value of the resource, the opportunities therein, and with a certain amount of training and cooperation, we'll go out independently, free enterprise, with some knowledge and background as to how to recruit, how to talk to folks, what conferences to go to, what business people to approach, then with the oversight of the business council, tell us whether or not we're on the right path, those things to avoid, those things that we can do in order to help ourselves in a free market situation to be more independent. They will act as, not as consultants, but in an advisory capacity to achieve the goals that we have in regard to uplifting our community in economic sense. It's new, it's modern, it's competitive. All we need is the expertise of these people that we've hired through the business council and other state entities to come into our community and to help us, educate us, guide us, look after us, and tell us when we're on the wrong path. That's what we want from this. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, for my second time, and we do want the business council to do all those things, to educate, to help us put our case in front of potential investors elsewhere and set forth the advantages that Wyoming does have. That's their job. They will hopefully do that regardless of whether this bill passes or not. When we look back on our history of economic development, it's been a mixed bag. We've had some success. We've had some failure. Most of our success has come where we've reduced the regulatory burdens, where we've reduced the government taxation burden, as with the pollution control equipment, where we've gotten government out of the way of the private enterprise system. But I would suggest to the Senate where we start investing state dollars in projects. And this bill, it's a very creative approach to doing that, but that's basically what you were doing, and I recall to you the debate in committee of the whole and how the bill was described. The state was making an investment. We haven't had much success in that. Look at the Amendment 4 projects. We went and tried that for a bit. And how many of those loans went bad? Look at that. That was not a great success. We haven't been doing it much recently because it wasn't a great success. And I remember in particular a project known as Charfuels, Mr. President, that came to the legislature for us to act as their banker. And we had plenty of cause to regret that one. Those things, those kind of investments are best left to free private enterprise. And yes, this bill is a creative route for putting state money into those projects, but it's still putting state money into those projects, and we're better off not going down that road.
Senator Bebout,
Thank you, Mr. President. Some great discussion, some great debate. Just a couple of things, and I certainly understand the Amendment 4 process and some of those projects early on in the late 80s, early 90s. This is very, very different than that, in my opinion. What we're talking about here is a situation where we need this as a component to be able to provide a reasonable price and a sustained price for the feedstock. The private sector does what they do. The technology is there. They develop it. They step up. They do what they're supposed to do, and we're there to support them in a way that I think makes sense. It really has nothing to do with Amendment 4 in those kind of situations. Totally different. I would continue to ask the body to support this bill.
Senator Case, for your second time.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Thanks to all the members for the good discussion. A couple points I'd like to make in wrapping up is that I think this proposal has very little to do with the kind of tax exemptions that we had before when power plants came to Wyoming, and I love that we're taking credit for that, and I'm glad they're here, and I would like to have more of them. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think we can draw a similarity between a tax exemption, which we have tax exemptions for manufacturing equipment now, which any new plant would qualify for. I don't think we can draw the conclusion that that is the same as this very vigorous proposal to inject money into and invest in a facility. As the good senator from Natrona County mentioned, this is not our first rodeo, and we've had some pretty rough rides when we actually tried to, get in and invest in the more exotic technologies. The fine senator from Laramie made the point that there are successful operations around the world, and I challenge him on that point. I'll tell you why. There are places where it makes sense in the world because of shut-in resources. And the greatest example of this is things when Germany, of course, during World War II, they pioneered a lot of the coal-to-liquids technology. And they had to. They didn't have a choice. And it made sense for them. Later, the world leader in that area was South Africa, Mr. President, especially during the restrictions on trade that characterized the apartheid era. And they were the pioneer for technology transfer around the world. But they don't use that technology anymore as markets have opened up. My own work in another country, of Nigeria, was about the exact same problem. It's the second largest flaring country that flares natural gas in the world. They would love to have more use for their gas. I was brought there to help with gas-to-power projects. But I also got to go, for example, to Bonny Island, where the world's second largest natural gas to liquefaction trains are. It's just amazing to see the investment there. But that's because there's no connection with way to get their gas out to the world. So it's worthwhile for the country and the major oil and gas companies that are there to spend money to try to do something with that product. We don't have that problem. Free trade, pipelines, open markets all make this less desirable in the United States and less desirable in Wyoming. I would love to have more economic development in Wyoming. I would love for this to work. The part I don't love is that when we ignore the teachings of this book and act like we are in private business, what would stop us? If we can do this, we can do anything. We could build refrigerators. I'm against the bill, Mr. President. Thank you.
The chief clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks? Johnson? Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer excused. Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas, conflict?
Yes.
Closing vote. Closing.
That went rather well.
Vote closed. 23 aye, 5 no, 1 excused, 1 conflict.
House Bill 53, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 53 has passed the Senate. Do you have any messages? Majority Leader Floor Leader Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, off to my right up here is a class of 2015 members of that class in Leadership Wyoming. You'll all recognize Bill Schilling up there. Let's welcome him to the Senate. Stand up. And, Mr. President, I might add that there are members on the floor that also participated in that program, but the best class still was the first one, 2001.
The second best class. All right. Do we have any messages? No messages, we're done. Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole to discuss bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion's been adopted. Senator Pappas.
Oh! Oh! What's in your hand there, your cheat sheet?
30 of our. Oh, you already have a cheat sheet.
I got
some.
My tears.
There you go. So, same advice I give to everybody.
Don't screw it up.
Yeah. Well, I'll try not.
Well, I know what it is. Well, yeah, we don't want that to get you in trouble. Yeah, let's say something.
Okay, now everyone, please be gentle. Okay. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill number 237. The reading clerk will please read the House Bill.
House Bill number 237, Water and Sewer District Contracts. Sponsored by Representative Moniz. Pass the House on third. Oh, what am I doing? We're going this way. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and no, Senator Case, excuse, Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You ever heard the reading of the bill? What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome to your first day.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill number 237, Water and Sewer District Contracts. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'd ask that you yield my time to the good senator from the Northeast, Senator Driscoll.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I'd like to bring you Water and Sewer District Contracts. This is an update bill. Basically, what it does is Water and Sewer Districts, in order to go about their business, anything in the original statute that was over $7,500, which has now, through inflation and various means, got where it's a pretty inconsequential amount. So it amends in two places. On page 2, on lines 8, it strikes the $7,500 and inserts $30,000. And on page 3, it does the same. What's really happened is, over time, these contracts at $7,500, when they bid them, at $7,500 they have to bid. And when you go to a bid, it requires that it goes out for a performance bond and on the bid, which adds to your project costs. And when you get into $7,500 anymore, those are pretty small projects. And so almost all the other areas of the law, we've moved that up. For example, University of Wyoming's at $25,000. The cities are at $35,000. This just kind of brings them up into the same league, makes where they don't have to bid a lot of the smaller type projects. update, good deal. I'd stand for questions. Encourage you to vote for it.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. I understand what the limits are like at the university and for cities, towns, or counties, but with these smaller districts, they don't have the size and substantial amount of contracts they bid, and for them a $30,000 contract might be a big contract. Was there any discussion about that relative to the amount of work they do, the volume of the work, and the size of the work?
Senator Riskell.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, there has been conversation about that, and in truth, that's actually a good part of why this comes, is it really burdens them a lot of times in these smaller districts. You'll have a hard time getting somebody to bid on a job even. They're tiny little jobs, and it, because of the bonding requirements, you don't get bidders on them, or you only get one, and it actually drives the cost up on the thing. You're further ahead to not do it. I hope that answers your question.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Y'all, I was a no vote in committee. I'm not strongly a no, but I think this is the fact that we're talking about this bill kind of points out something that we maybe ought to pay attention to, and it might be something we should look at in the interim. And that is what I hear people say about raising these bid limits is that going to bid is such a difficult thing, that it involves expense for publication requirements. It involves delays in having bids out. And I'm wondering if perhaps in the interim we could think about maybe revising bid requirements so that it's easier to go to bid for smaller amounts. And I hear from folks all the time in my district that say, the state put this job out, or they put this job out, we didn't even know about it. Or the city did this job, we didn't even know about it. We didn't have a chance to compete. We didn't even know it was coming. And so there's got to be a way to reconcile getting notice out, providing an opportunity for many people to participate without going to the full-blown bid process. So I'm not strongly against this bill at all. I think it's probably a good bill, and it matches what we do elsewhere. But there is a problem with our bidding process if what we continue to try to do is to raise the limits to get out of doing it. There's got to be a way that we can let the private sector compete in smaller projects.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, full agreement with the last deal. Vote for the bill, and let's fix the other problem later, but vote for the bill.
Senator Perkins.
You know, to the last point, I mean, ultimately, just a little while ago, on third reading, we passed a bill that removed the publication requirement for certain other things. I mean, the issue that you have is that, quite frankly, publication costs are very expensive. And so ultimately, that's the issue that we'll struggle with is on this notification is how and where that notification has to go. In the end, there is a compromise. There is ways that we can do that without having to raise these limits, and so we can get there. But just moving forward, just reminding the body that we are headed in this direction, and so jump up and. To object this bill on the absence of the notice in light of the actions we've taken earlier today, it would question why you would vote down this bill instead of vote it up, instead of move this one through and let it move on. This is a good way to save money for folks that have, but at the same time, we've got to find the issue that we stop the sweetheart deals and make sure that taxpayers, even though they may be small districts, get the best and most appropriate bang for their buck.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 237, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 237 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is House Bill
56.
House Bill number 56, Wyoming Food Freedom Act, sponsored by Representative Ludholm. It was referred to committee number 5, Agriculture, State Public Lands and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader. No, Senator Emmerich and Geis. Senator Geis, Chairman.
And there is a standing committee amendment. Could we have the standing committee amendment read in?
House Bill 56, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 10.
You have the, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Emmerich.
Mr. Chairman, I'm moving the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable vote on House Bill 56, Food Freedom Act. And for the explanation of the bill and the amendments, I'll yield to the good Senator from Devil's Tower.
Senator Driscoll.
Ladies and gentlemen, deja vu. House Bill 56, I'd like to tell you about a great bill. You've all seen it many times before. I'm going to start with out of respect for Sue Wallace. This was Sue Wallace's bill out of the House. Excuse me, she's not supposed to say that.
Senator Driscoll.
From beyond.
Senator Driscoll, would you move the bill, please? Or the amendment?
I move the amendment, Amendment 1, Standing Committee Amendment, House Bill. I thought go ahead. Back to that. So we're here with it. It's I'll work the amendment in as we visit about the bill. And what food freedom is, like I say, you've all seen it before, starting working through the bill, this really does a great thing. We've got a black market going on, and we've got a repressed market as well, as far as farm-raised foods in Wyoming. And what this bill does is makes a lot of what's happening already legal and encourages farm-to-ranch markets in our cities and towns and throughout the country. Section 102 on page 2 and 3 are definitions. The most important definition is the informed end consumer, and that's on page 3, lines 5 through 8. We all know what an informed end consumer is. It's the last person that purchases it, does not resell it, and been informed that the product is not licensed, regulated, or inspected. And that's the most important part, is they make sure they know that this product does not come under any of that end of it. Section 103 covers the purposes, the exemptions, and most importantly, assumption of risk. Line 19, page 3, the purpose is well defined by stating agriculture sales by farmers markets, ranchers, farms, and home-based producers and accessibility to informed end consumers. If you go on to the next page, 4 and 5, you can see how it happens. Page 4, line 17 through 19 states that nothing in this article shall preclude an agency from providing assistance, consultation, or inspection when requested by the producer. Bottom of page 4, talk about the transactions that are covered by the Wyoming Food Freedom Act, and these are important. Must only be for home consumption. You're not commercially reselling. It's not going into stores. It only occurs within the state of Wyoming. And it does not involve interstate commerce, which is a part of the deal. And this is a huge one because USDA's got big rules about selling across state lines without being inspected. On page 5, line 10, we look at the exemptions to it that keeps informed end consumer informed but ensures the Wyoming Department of Health still has jurisdiction in any foodborne illness investigation. This is important. They're still there. That particular exemption for the Department of Health can be seen on page 6, starting on line 4. Moving to page 7,
1149-104, starting line 17, we talk about meat, and specifically take an order to sell meat to an informed consumer. The meat part, as far as the beef end, was taken out of this because of potential conflicts with the federal end. There's some good rules dealing with poultry already, and we left those in. That's up to 10,000 birds. Those are there, so poultry is still going to be there. This bill actually really encourages a good farmer's market in Wyoming. We took a half step on this a number of years ago. We heard a lot of the things you may have heard on this about as far as people getting sick and how it happens. When we did that, that's with the good help of the senator from Fremont County, we made it where a lot of these goods could be given away, sold at church bazaars, used at picnics. All of the predictions of the sky is falling did not come to be true. We're still surviving. Everything's good, and as far as I know, there's been no major cases of any kind. This merely takes it on to the next level where the farm people can actually produce and take it on through. As far as the amendments, these page 2, line 10 was just a cleanup. On page 2, line 11, we deleted the producer's designated agent and moved it down another line. This was at the request of the Department of Health. Same as deleting packaging on page 5, line 22. The rest of it was all cleanup, and then we went back to page 8, line 6, and after commercial, they inserted food to make sure it wasn't just a commercial-type deal. And on page 8, line 15, we deleted business or person and inserted producer informed consumer to make it fit the rest of the bill. Folks, this literally is really a good bill that's going to help business in Wyoming. It's already happening in a lot of areas of the state, and it brings some people where they can really generate some income in tough times. With that, I'd stand for any questions.
Senator Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering on page 6, line 18 and 19, goes on to say that the consumer is legally responsible for any and all damage, injury, or death to himself or other persons or property, et cetera, et cetera. And I was just wondering if, by chance, a consumer were to get sick, die because of some food purchased in this manner, would that absolve, let's say, a life insurance policy from paying or a health insurance policy from having to pay any medical expenses?
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to defer to the legal crowd on that one. I don't even have a close to an informed answer. Perhaps.
Senator Dockstead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not the legal crowd, but don't we make choices all the time? Don't we get in our cars and drive those at our own choice? And couldn't we get in a car and make our own choice to drive? Isn't that detrimental to our health? And doesn't the life insurance pick up the tab for those types of situations?
Senator Raffas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have a couple of questions also, and I've certainly been interested in these bills over the past few years and have always had concerns, and I appreciate a lot of the safeguards that have been put into this, but I don't know if I'm still quite there yet. Informed consumer concept, I think, gets at a lot of the concerns, but my question about informed end consumer on page 3, the definition is my 11-year-old an informed end consumer? So can he buy something at a street fair and then assume all liability, or would his parent have to somehow assume that liability? That would be one question. The second is the level of information. Oh, I need to be on the amendment, don't I? Those are wonderful questions, Mr. Chairman, if I were referring to the bill. But since I'm not, I'll just let the sponsor have those as food for thought.
Senator Von Flaterin.
On the amendment, Mr. Chairman, as soon as I find it on here, it had to do with the, it'll be page 6, about something about delete shall not, insert is required to, which is page 6, line 3. And the sentence doesn't read correctly to me. Not potentially hazardous food is defined by, is required to be labeled not potentially hazardous. I thought it should start out potentially hazardous food, or am I misinterpreting that line?
Senator Driscoll, were you going to answer that question?
I'm working on it. One second.
While you're doing that, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A good seatmate here might have come up with something. Sounds like an opportunity for a second reading amendment.
Senator Driscoll.
Yes, thank you, good Senator.
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, before we take any votes on this bill, I wish to declare conflict. This bill has been around a number of years. I've always declared a conflict on this bill. You all know that I have a relationship with a restaurant company that has taken an active position in opposition to this, and so I will maintain my consistency and declare conflict.
Senator Nicholas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I understand that, but I always thought when I ate Taco Tony's, the food was washed first.
Senator Emmerich.
We're on the amendment. Sorry.
Yeah, I keep wanting to get back up.
Senator Hicks, you had stood up earlier. Did you want to speak? Guess not. Okay, the question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion to adopt Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 56, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No.
Amendment.
Mr. Roth. Senator Roth.
I believe was moved by Senator Driscoll, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
So can we recall that? Thank
yes.
you.
Thank you. Standing Committee Amendment. Standing Committee Amendment. Okay, here we go again. All those in favor of Senator Driscoll's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 56, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, thank you. The amendment has passed. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, back on the bill, a question for the sponsor. If we go to page 6 and you go to line 11 under section H, it says nothing in this article shall be construed to change the requirements for brand inspections, et cetera, et cetera. Then if we go over to page 5, when it talks about transactions under this section shall, and you go down to section V on page 5, which is line 10, it says, not involved in the sale of meat products except the sale of poultry and poultry products. I guess my question is, are we branding chickens in Wyoming now? And do you require a brand inspection for your branded chickens?
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, what that does, if you want to buy beef, you go out and you buy the beef, the brand inspector inspects it, and you take it to a state certified packing house to have it slaughtered and fixed however you want. So that's why the brand inspection is in there. You have to own the beef before it dies, and then you can do whatever you want with it.
And I appreciate that explanation, but the question was, are we branding chickens in Wyoming now?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, no, but I gather from the explanation, and I hope somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, that the prohibition against selling meat products does not apply to selling live animals on the hoof, and there you do need a brand inspection. Mr. Chairman, while I'm on my feet, you know, I've received some lobbying from some of the my own health office, county health officer, and some of the other public health community on this subject. And they don't like this bill. Mr. Chairman, most of that has convinced me that it's a good bill. And needed so that we don't get unreasonable governmental regulations interfering with the sale of products. But I do rise to express one deep concern, and that is reading the bill and talking with the sponsor of the bill. It does appear to me that this would allow the sale of raw milk products. And that concerns me. Milk is an ideal mechanism, medium, for various kinds of bacteria to grow, multiply. Caused a lot of illness in the days before pasteurization was invented. Can transmit some other things, can transmit specifically tuberculosis. Problem we haven't had to worry about in this country for years, but it's still around. And a number of other countries, Mr. Chairman, tried systems where they would sell raw milk, sell it to the public, and try to take care of it by policing the cow herd, getting rid of all the cows that might have tuberculosis. Great Britain tried that for years, and it didn't work. And I think one place where some of the public health concerns with this bill are justified are when it comes to the sale of raw milk products. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support this bill through Committee of the Whole, but I think a second reading amendment on that subject is in order, because I think there are some very real public health risks in that. In the rest of this, there are cultural products. No. You can judge for yourself and take care of those risks yourself. It's not a problem. But raw milk is different, and I think does present a real risk the way this bill's written.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, raw milk is not in the bill. The only way you can buy raw milk is if you go out and own part of the cow that produces the milk. That's state law right now. As far as the chickens, there's two certified slaughter places in Wyoming to handle chickens. One is in Wheatland, Wyoming. The other is in Star Valley. And there's a third that they're trying to get qualified in Riverton. Other than that, I'm just telling you, if you pass this bill, buyer beware. And whoever's doing the selling better have damn good liability insurance.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we on the bill?
We are on the bill.
Okay, that's good, because my questions are related to the bill. Back to the informed consumer concept, which is...
Mr. Christensen, or Senator Christensen.
I think we've already heard these questions.
There's a third. Redundancy. Mr. Chairman, the informed consumer concept, I did mention the age requirement. Is there anything along those lines, that the 11-year-old, is that an informed consumer or not? But questions further about what informed end consumer actually gets to. There's nothing here about any requirement that you provide any warning with regard to the danger of having these foods, the possibility of food contamination because there's no inspection, simply that the information that they're not licensed, regulated, or inspected is somehow passed along. So is that sufficient in terms of a warning for people to actually understand the risk of listeria, what listeria could do, the risk of E. coli, what that could do to you, other foodborne pathogens, and what the potentialities would be of those? Another question is with regard to how you verify that that transaction making someone shift from an uninformed consumer to an informed consumer takes place. There's a lot of trust there just that somebody says, oh, by the way, don't forget this is not licensed, regulated, or inspected. Well, if that person is sick and wants to bring a lawsuit, obviously if that conversation has in some way taken place, then all of the liability has shifted from one party to the other party. But there's no written record of that. There's no real management of that. I'm curious how this would actually play out in terms of that transfer of liability. And then my final question, Mr. Chairman, is with regard to that shift in liability on page 6, little j. This is a pretty significant waiver of any liability whereby it really lets the producer completely off the hook to a pretty significant degree, whereby they really would have no obligation at that point to even have standard quality controls in place that they would normally have. It really could be milk that I left out in the sun, but as long as I tell you that it hasn't been inspected, you're good to go, and all liability is yours in terms of a buyer beware. The final point is with regard to that milk, my reading is that it would apply to milk, so I would ask the sponsor if it would or would not. I think there's a little bit of confusion there. I can't see anywhere in here where it wouldn't apply to raw milk and dairy products. So my understanding is that it actually would.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was, of course, a no vote in committee because I have some of the same concerns about foodborne illnesses. And I also, on the question of milk right now, cow shares, if you purchase cow shares, you can purchase raw milk within the state. But this brings me back to the informed consumer. What if you buy some raw milk, put it in your refrigerator, and your 10-year-old son, who is supposedly informed, brings home three buddies from playing football in the backyard, and they just go into the refrigerator, drink the milk, and we get a good case of Campylobacter enteritidis in one of the neighbor kids. These are things that need to be addressed, and I'm not sure that this bill will address it. I just have public health concerns. That's my business. And so I really do have reservations about this. I think we've tightened it up considerably from the bill in the past, bills in the past, but I still think there are considerations, and I hope I'm crying wolf. I really do, but, you know, it doesn't take more than a couple, three sick kids and maybe a death or two from all kinds of those diseases are out there, because this kind of reminds me of various forms of birth control. Trust me.
Mr. President. Mr. President.
You know what? I have about five things to say, and not one of them I think I should say. It's just not like me not to respond to that invitation. Mr. Chairman, I guess part of the interesting thing about this bill is it is one thing to say you don't have to get a license to go out, or you don't have to get certain permits to sell your food directly to a consumer. And that would be, if that's where you stopped, then you would say, we're going to just step out of this relationship where there's a farmer's market and we're going to step out of the relationship. The problem with this bill is that we're not stepping out of the relationship. We're putting our heavy hand in to say, we're going to step out of the relationship, except for what we're going to do is, by the way, that farmer over there, we're going to give him immunity and to say that as a consumer, that farmer is not required to eliminate, alter, control the inherent risk related to purchase, ingestion of food, food product, etc. So we're going to give him these special things. Now, I can already imagine the money that attorneys are going to make on this, because my thoughts go wide. But when I was in cutting short my high school, I spent a year over in Japan, and they had just come off years where all their food products were washed in iodine first. And if you use latrines and watch where the latrine went, you'd know why they did it. It was great fertilizer, but it created a lot of issues. And almost all the third world, there's all certain things were used for fertilizer. Most of your ranchers probably distribute and harrow your fields every summer. And what do? You distribute the fertilizer. Now, you may or may not be doing that in your gardens and the food stuff. But what is true is this, is that probably nobody in this room in their lifetime has ever washed all their food in iodine, unless you're probably pre-World War II and you're in a certain area. Now, many of you have been in instances where all your water, the city called you and said, by the way, you have to boil your water. Otherwise, you assume that everything that comes out of the tap is just great. And most of you probably either just drink beer or adhere to different rules when you go to Mexico or other places, because you know the tap water isn't always fluoridated. So my point is this, is that we're no longer in an environment where people understand what the risks are. My undergraduate degree was in microbiology, and I think what our colleague who's veterinarian said is that the inherent risk for food is a lot, everything that's microbial. It's out there in the environment. And what's happened over the time in regulated food is people have taken the lettuce, they've learned to treat it, they've learned to make sure that it is ready for mass ingestion. People are not as strong as they used to be. You know, if you remember, I'm one of those guys that had dysentery in India. And if any of you walked in down the streets of New Delhi and have never had dysentery, you're going to get sick. For those of us that are inoculated, you can probably eat more than the other person. So all of a sudden we have this language that says, you assume all these risks. Now, if you're protecting your constituents, what do you think that means? I'm telling you that when you're walking down the streets of India and or China right now and you take food off, everything you eat there is the inherent risk. And I bet you don't have a single constituent that thinks that when they go to the farmer market, that they have to wash that food. They may have to take special precautions for that food because they're used to going into a grocery store buying food. If they have berries in the morning, maybe not, they wash them off before they put them in their cereal. So I'm okay with saying you can buy food from the farmer. What I find interesting is now the farmers say, well, you have to step into our relationship and protect us. Well, the farmer knows all the stuff that's in his fields if he's been there very long. Believe me, your consumers have no idea what's in that field. They think that when strawberries come out of the ground, it's just like a fresh baby coming out of the... now I'm back to and stop. You, I think you get it.
Senator Anderson, 02.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm really quite conflicted by this bill. When I see things like this come before the legislature, I think about a song. And the song, the words in the song is, Grandpa,
Tell me about the good old days. And I'm no youngster and lived somewhat in the good old days. And I, many times I'd like to go back to that. I've been to India and I've been to China, and by the experience I remember from the good old days, I knew how to protect myself against some of the things that were just mentioned. I know of an uncle that had indolent fever. If I have my facts right, indolent fever comes as a result of having drank milk from a Bang's disease cow. Not a pretty thing. My grandmother had tuberculosis. Tuberculosis, which she contracted from a cow. At one time, and I can remember in country school, we would go take our TB test. Mine, my brothers, my family's always turned up positive. We didn't have TB, but we had been exposed to a certain element of that that didn't really give us a disease, but we were positive to that. So having said all that in regard to that, having lived in the good old days, I'm sensitive to some of the risks that were involved with that and know some, to some degree, how to protect myself. My wife and I went to India. We got off the bus and there was a big elaborate buffet and whatnot, and they handed us a drink with ice in it. The minute we got off the bus, I said, don't do it. One of them dumped it out. Everyone else went in and enjoyed the buffet and drank their drinks. Next day, three busloads, two of them were sick. But the idea being not, that's kind of outside the scope of the bill, but the idea being we don't have the educated public that has the knowledge in which to make their own decisions to protect themselves in this instance. Now, I don't know if I'm really speaking for or against the bill, but I am conflicted with the idea that there needs to be, in the event these things come about, some education of the public in regard to what the risks are. And that's really all I have to say, is that we need to be somewhat cautious about this. Thank you.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good arguments. This piece of legislation caught my interest because during the recession, things changed a lot for our local economy. And families who were making it all of a sudden found themselves struggling, 08, 09, 010 through there. And we saw the startup of these farm markets, so to speak, these fresh food markets and so forth, on the road or in parks and so forth. People were able to make a little extra income, help themselves. And that's, but it's, and a couple of those actually spun off to bigger operations where they've actually turned it into something where they can have a credible business now. And I agree that there's an inherent risk. That's a good argument, Mr. Chairman. But don't we, doesn't it come down essentially to us to make that decision? To be careful about if we have great concerns that we don't stop by one of those markets and use them? I've had the pleasure of traveling in these places too, or good senator from Lander, I've been over to that country too, Nigeria, and I travel carefully and I eat carefully. And sometimes I went a couple of days eating cheese and crackers just to make sure that I got to a safe place. Well, that same concept is here. You still have that choice. We're not taking anything away from your opportunity to go into a regular grocery store and buy all the prepared products. What we're doing here is creating an opportunity for people to have a basic little business next to their home or in their farm operation and give them an opportunity to reach out to a new market that's kind of evolved. That market wasn't there before. I would say to you, it's here now. I go past a couple of our operations in the summer. It's a busy place. They stop by, pick up some salad. There's the milk, but that's done under cow shares. And I'd submit to you that a lot's changed in that. People understand the proper cleanliness now and the cooling of the milk. A lot's changed. Members of the Senate, there's an inherent risk, yes, but I would submit to you that there also is an inherent right to purchase the food that you want to purchase. And so I'd stand for this bill.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, that was pretty inspiring. I like that. A lot of the arguments for why we're doing it have just been made. I travel a lot, foreign countries. Guess what? you look very, very careful when you're eating from a taco stand in Mexico. You look pretty careful where you're at, and that's called an informed consumer, and we all do that. I've got friends that won't travel to Mexico. I've got a house down there. I have friends who won't travel down there because they're afraid of what the food might do to them. That's true in the United States. People are very, very cautious. And that's why we talk about informed consumers, is we're not dealing with people that are uninformed. The people that are wanting to buy from these farm markets, and believe me, they thrive in very many areas of the United States today. We're one of the states, interestingly enough, we're an ag state, we're one of the states that's prohibiting this. You can go across other state lines and do it. Guess what? Cows out of the barn, folks. We've had cow shares for a number of years now. Name any cases to me. We got some informed consumers out there. The deal's working. The regulations we've reduced due to informed consumers, which had to do with the other bill I talked about. We're not seeing the sky has fallen. If we're seeing problems with it, we can go back and deal with it. But for right now, this has been going on. I've bought raw milk for years from my neighbor. Didn't know it was illegal till I got in the legislature, but my neighbor would bring me a gallon or two of milk a week. It's been going on. And the truth is, we're not having the problems. This bill's a way to bring us in line, get us where we can actually sell things and do it on a legal basis and do it in the right way. This does it. As far as the labeling goes on the thing, that was what the state talked about, and actually, there is no simple way to do it. Back to your neighbor's kid coming and getting your refrigerator, I would venture to say he may get into something else in your house as well. That's up to a parent to take care of what happens when the neighbor's kids come over. There's a lot worse things than milk in the fridge and in our homes. You accept a certain degree of responsibility for who comes into your home. Same thing if you're going to be eating. It falls the same way. This bill's good. It really brings us back into a place that we can make Wyoming a better place, help our people do better and sell products in Wyoming. And that's what we're about. Let's be informed. Let's do it. Let's do it the right way.
We do have a committee of the whole amendment that I asked to be read in at this time.
House Bill 55, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy. Page 9, line 8.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
56.
There we go. Thank you. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 56 and ask that it be, well, it has been read in. And if we could get that out of the way, I'd ask for your vote. This is your affirmative vote. This just talks about deleting the existing bill language that on when it starts, and it actually says effective immediately. When the Department of Ag was up in the meeting, we asked them, is there any reason to wait until July, or should this be effective immediately? And they said, you can do it effective immediately. There's no significant impact on their side. So I'd ask for that vote first.
Okay, you've all heard the question. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to House Bill 56, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The amendment has passed. Back on the bill. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the legislature, you know, we've talked a little bit about these cow shares, but the reality is if you want whole milk, it's out there now. You have it in your fridge and the neighbor's kids come over. It's accessible now. What this bill really does is just kind of clear up what people are already doing. And most people would look at that whole share or that cow share law as it stands today as a get-around. It's a way to get around this. And so rather than have these things that are designed to be get-arounds, let's just go ahead and acknowledge what's going on and what the market is asking for. And speaking of market asking for things, you know, there's a common term in the dental profession called Mountain Dew mouth. And we have Mountain Dew here. We see people in the news, it's reported frequently, and you see the emails go around about people dying from energy drinks. There are all kinds of hazards out there that are legal. It's hard to come up with a food value on a Twinkie. This one isn't a bad bill.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, could I have the privilege of the floor for just a moment, please?
Yes, you may.
Members of the body, if you would you help me welcome the fourth and fifth grade class from the Little Snake River Rattlers and their school teacher, Tommy Sue Willie, in the galley with me?
And while we're at it, the chair will also take privilege of the floor. I see up in the gallery my parents. They must have been listening online because I don't think they knew I was sitting here, but my parents are up in the gallery. Andy and Theoni Pappas. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question for the chair. Point of order, how did your father get so much better looking than you?
Do I have to answer that? Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My good friend Glenn Rock was telling some stories about the old days. I could share a couple of those myself, but I do, rising in support of the bill with some amendments that I'd like to see, particularly on the liability, but I think the Department of Health shares some responsibility in this process as well. I grew up in a dairy. I spent a lot of hours wet with a scrub brush, with a black light, looking for milkstone on the inside of tanks, and I heard all those stories from my dad growing up, so I know about that, and he was a big believer in pasteurization. That's how we made our living. Somewhere along the line in my very early life, I ended up being a lobbyist for an organization, and part of my job was to deal with the fact that food sellers were caught between the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Health, and local regulatory authorities, and specifically a firm that I worked for at the time. We'd have one come in and write us a ticket because the sink was too close to the bathroom. Another would come in and write us a ticket because the sink was too far from the bathroom. And we had a legislative hearing on that, and we presented this, and what we were trying to do is get them all to agree on what the regulations would be. We felt the thumb on the scale, regulatory scale, was too heavy. And the legislators there called upon a fellow that had actually been one of the original hires back in the day with the department, and they asked for his views. And then what he said is this: when we first started, we were educating people on why it was important not to use the same knife to cut the raw meat as you used to cut the cooked meat. He said, now somehow we've evolved to the point that we're writing tickets because the sink is too close or too far from the bathroom, and we've really lost the discretion to tell what's important from what's not. So you zip ahead a few more years, and in Sheridan we're having a street festival with the farmers market. Word comes to the mayor the thing's being shut down by the department because they don't have hand-washing facilities in the street festival. And I thought, oh, I'm familiar with this issue. So we got it all worked out that we could put buckets of chlorinated water at various points in the street market. But the point is, a small town mayor shouldn't have to swing into action to get that resolved. There should be enough sense of discretion and judgment and balance on the part of the department to work those things out. And if that existed, this bill would not be here before us today. We still cannot have a certain religious group that bakes pies and various goods can't be at the street fest because they're baked goods. They can bring their raised vegetables. They can't bring their pies. Come on, folks. There's got to be some reasonable balance, some midway in between that, between the rampant disease from unpasteurized milk and folks being able to sell a pie or a cookie at a street festival. And that's really why this bill is in front of us. So I'm hoping that we can strike the balance through some amendments on this bill to satisfy those folks who'd like to be able to sell their produce at a street fest or at a farmer's market, and the need to avoid the rampant diseases of the past from a complete laissez-faire approach to food regulation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question on the bill. Senator Ruffis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm still curious about all the original questions I had that I did manage to repeat two times on what the definition of an informed end consumer is and whether or not that includes my kids. And that's really my biggest concern. I never have any objection to adults being able to make informed choices that only affect their own lives and outcomes. That's certainly something that I'm very, very happy with. The concern that I always have is if I want a circumstance where I don't want my kids to end up drinking raw milk because there isn't proper labeling, because they're not informed consumers, because they're just children, but this legislation does not in any way, shape, or form require that there be a limitation on handing this over to my kids as long as the person says to them, now, you know, this isn't licensed, right? And Zane says, I have no idea what you're talking about. Give me a glass of milk. And at that point in time, he's got a glass of milk that would be something that I would not be happy to have him have, but the statutes would allow that. So I'm not sure how we're getting at that point. I also am concerned that as the president said, this is not simply the government stepping away from it. This is the governor saying there's a complete waiver of liability on behalf of the producer. That's a very different thing. So I want to, I share the concerns of the good senator from Sheridan. I want to be happy with this. I want a bill like this to pass that is reasonable middle ground, but I'm still not comfortable that this is there. This one provides risks to my family, to the people that don't want to be consuming these types of things because there's no labeling requirement. There's no affirmative requirement of consent. There's no requirement to provide information about the potential hazards. None of those things exist. This is no more than effectively a handshake that's unverifiable and could be a handshake between a producer and a child at the farmer's market. So I'm still concerned, and I hope those issues can be addressed potentially through some amendment.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with favorable recommendation of House Bill 56, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The House bill has passed. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 128. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 128, Notice Requirement Special District Election, sponsored by Representative Gere. It was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and welcome to your parents. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill number 128, Notice Requirements, Special District Elections. I'd ask that you yield my time to the good Senator Scott from Natrona County.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. House Bill 128 comes to us because of an experience that the bill sponsor had questioning his area with a special district as to what their notice requirements really were, how many days did they have to do things. And kind of interesting, it turns out that when you say something has to be done within so many days, that's not as clear as you might think. And the issue is, do you count just business days, or do you count calendar days? And the question the committee had on this bill, what this bill does is it specifies in the special districts law that it's business days. So you're not counting Saturday and Sunday and not counting our standard holidays, you know, things like the 4th of July and whatnot. And that makes a lot of sense for short deadline things because you could get into a situation where you get a couple of weekends involved and a holiday, and you really don't have much time to get things done. It doesn't matter with longer time periods, but with short time periods, it can be a problem. What the rules of civil procedure do, apparently, is say that for the first 10 days, it's business days, and after that, it's calendar days. And that actually is a pretty sensible rule. But it wasn't clear whether that applied or not. And we asked the Secretary of State's office, what about other parts of the election code where you have some short deadlines? 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, 7 days. What does it mean? And we didn't get a very clear answer. This bill, I think we ought to pass because it does make it clear that these short deadlines in here, and they're 10-day deadlines and there's a 7-day deadline, these are going to be business days, and that makes sense. But it looks like we have a general problem in the statutes as confusion over what's meant when we say so many days, particularly with the shorter time periods. And I'm going to suggest to the Management Council and ask the members that are here to pay attention, we probably ought to put a general rule in Title VIII as to what we mean by days, so that if we just say days, it then becomes very clear. I think the rule that's in the rule of civil procedure actually makes a lot of sense. That might be the way to go. So I urge the Senate to pass this bill. It'll solve the problem for the special districts that are covered by the 2229 article. So that's useful, but I think we've got a more general problem that we ought to have a general rule on, because there was clear confusion as the committee discussed it as to how it worked in some of the rest of the statutes. And were we introducing something special, or was this just the way that everything should work? And it's something there ought to be a clear answer to. So with that, Ms. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions. This bill solves the problem in one particular area, but it's a more general problem, and we ought to have a general solution to it.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 128, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 128 has passed the Senate, or has passed first reading. Committee of the Whole, excuse me. Thinking about the next one coming up. Senator Landon, would you please come forward? Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 231. Will the reading clerk please read in the bill?
House Bill number 231, Hathaway Scholarships Exceptions from Requirement, sponsored by Representative Baker. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Coe, Dockstader, Pappas, and Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, move when Committee the Whole rises to report House Bill 231 and defer to Senator Pappas.
Senator Pappas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a pretty simple bill. This deals with Hathaway scholarships and an exception from the requirements. If you'll turn to the bill, page 2, you'll see the additional language in line 16 through 21. We are adding language here. Let me step back a second. This is dealing with high school equivalency certificates. Equivalency. There we go. Certificates. Basically, within the Hathaway Scholarship, as you all know, there's requirements in order to apply. in all the categories of equivalency. There is a situation, however, that that you cannot initiate an application without the natural graduation, having met the natural graduation date. Obviously, folks that have a high school equivalency certificate, there's a certain portion of them that have that issue. And so this language is dealing with that. Basically, the language states, for the purpose of making application prior to the graduation date of the student's class or their good cause, shall include but not be limited to a showing by the student that the student has been emancipated under the sections that deal with emancipation there, or that the student is a parent or legal guardian of a minor. So this is just helping those folks that have already been emancipated under Title 14 of our state code, and are also a parent or legal guardian, allowing them to actually apply for the application of the Hathaway grant prior to any natural graduation date. So it's fairly simple, just helping those folks out so that they can qualify for that scholarship, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Any conversation? Question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 231, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. House Bill 231 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration, House Bill 233. Excuse me, if the reading clerk would please read the House Bill.
House Bill number 233, Branch Bank License Expiration. Sponsored by Representative Somers. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Flateren, Senator Von Flateren, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Von Flateren.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the committee whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation and on House Bill 233, Branch Bank License Expiration, and I ask the chair to call upon Senator Coe to explain the bill.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, this bill deals with Branch Bank License Expiration. Remember that there's over 200 branch banks out there. The way the law reads today, they renew their license on their anniversary. This is brought by the banking division so that all the banks know that they have to do it on a particular date, that being June 30th of each year. That's all the bill does. It's a cleanup bill that makes it easier for the banking division and makes it easier for branches to understand. I'd ask that you support the bill.
Question.
Question's been called for. All those in favor of Senator Von Flateren's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with favorable recommendation of House Bill 233, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The bill has passed. Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 149 with the...
Point of order. Point of order, Mr. Chairman. Because you know what it costs for a branch.
Senator Bebop.
Yeah, that's not going to be discussed today.
I see. It's been removed from the list. Thank you. So that makes the next order of business, House Bill 225. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Henry Cravier,
House Bill number 225, Highway Patrol Security Duty, sponsored by Representative Berger. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Rossett, Wassenberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've read the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 225, Highway Patrol Security Duties. Members of the Senate, this is brought to you in conjunction with these Highway Patrol security duties will come into being with the relocation of the legislature and your elected officials during the renovation and relocation ultimately into the Hirschler building for some elected officials and their staff. So Section 1 goes in and basically deletes some of the language that's currently in the law that requires the Highway Patrol to provide security for all buildings, state-owned buildings in Laramie County. Quite frankly, there's simply not enough staff to do that. They do perform security in conjunction, though, with the city of police and sheriff's departments. And we do add language on page 2. The security will be in the Capitol building. The Hirschler office building is provided in the subsection, and, of course, for the governor's residence and security for the governor. There is a standing committee amendment that I'd ask be read in at this time.
House Bill 225, standing committee amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the adoption of standing committee amendment number 1. And the reason I move it now is that it goes in on that where we're talking about security for the governor, and on line 5, after governor, we have deleted the language which may require travel outside of Laramie County. It was clear to your committee, the Appropriations Committee, that it makes no difference why that language is there. They have to provide, and they do provide security for the governor wherever he is. And so we have deleted that language, and ask your favorable consideration of the standing committee amendment.
Question has been called. All those in favor of the standing of Senator Ross's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 225, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
So then we added new language with regard to security.
The amendment has passed.
Thank you. Just trying to move things along here. Calm down. Security is then provided, is intended to provide security for the statewide elected officials in the Capitol building and the Hirschler building and members of the legislature. Section 2 goes in and basically provides that during the rehabilitation, how the Highway Patrol will provide security, not only for wherever the governor's office is at, but also for the legislature when we move to the Jonah Bank or Jonah Financial Center, and to provide security where the electeds will be, which is most likely 2020 carry. And Section 3 is an appropriation of $200,000, and that is the appropriation goes to the Department of Transportation, under which the Highway Patrol is housed, and allows them to contract with security services for the statewide elected officials during the renovation rehabilitation phase when they're out of the Capitol, so that we have enough security for the governor, the legislature, and the elected officials. And this testimony in committee from the Colonel Butler from the Highway Patrol is that they are in the process of securing contracts for security and that they, it's not just going to be willy-nilly kind of security. It's going to be security that will most likely be post-certified and have the training to protect our elected officials. And I'd urge your favorable consideration of this bill.
Question's been called for. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with favorable recommendation of House Bill 225, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
House Bill 225 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 32. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 32, Hemp Extraction Regulation, sponsored by Representative McKim. It was referred to Committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 32 do pass. Mr. Chairman, there was a standing committee amendment. What we're going to do is not read that in at this time. We're going to get an explanation on the bill first. And then we'll deal with the standing committee amendment. So I yield to Senator Burns for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I present to you House Bill 32. There are a number of seizure disorders that people have, and it's estimated that about 5,000 people, Wyoming residents, suffer from these seizure disorders. Among the worst is intractable epilepsy. And there's a series of drugs have been applied to this, some with some success, some without, most recently steroids. And it is found that one of the most effective for a number of these people, and we're talking about people who have 60, 70 seizures a day. They have, frankly, have no life, and neither do their parents or their caretakers. And recently, they found that one of the most effective treatment for some of these people involves hemp oil extract. Now, we're talking hemp. We're not talking pot. We're not talking medical marijuana. Hemp oil does not have any intoxicating effects. The problem with it is that it's illegal. So what this bill does is make it legal. It gives an exemption from the law. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to, in committee, one of the parents brought their child, and that child happens to be the grandson of somebody that most of us who've been here for a while knew. Unfortunately, he's deceased now, but he was the proprietor of a well-known motel that burned down. This child is 3 or 4 years old and was having 60 seizures a day. It's frankly heartbreaking. So going to the bill, on page 1, line 2, providing an exemption for prosecution for possession or use of hemp oil extract. Then you go to page 2 and 3, you get to definitions, and I bring your attention to page 3, line 4, paragraph C, contains no other psychoactive substance. So make sure there's no THC. Again, we're not talking about medical marijuana. We go to more of the definitions, intractable epilepsy, definition of a neurologist, which is what you would expect it to be, parents and so forth. You get to page 4, and you get to the hemp extract registration cards. If you are an adult, you would apply for one of these. The department has will issue a registration card to somebody who is then there's a series of qualifications, have to be at least 18 years old, a resident of Wyoming, provide a statement to the department signed by a neurologist that states the person suffers from intractable epilepsy, and this is one of the areas that the standing committee amendment will come in. and may benefit from treatment of hemp extract, pays the fee, submits an application to the department that contains the individual's name and address, a valid photo identification, any other information the department may consider necessary. The next, on page 5, it deals with the parent of a minor who would suffer from this, and the parent is the one who would get the card for the minor. It goes through the exact same requirements until you get to E on page 7. The department shall establish a fee for maintaining the registry. That money will go to the general fund, and the registration card will be valid for 1 year. The neurologist who signs the statement shall keep a record of their evaluation and observation for the patient, transmit a copy of the records to the health department. The department shall maintain a database, and the record shall be kept confidential. But you look on page 8, line 13, they may share the records with a higher education institution for the purpose of studying hemp extract if the records are redacted so the patient cannot be identified individually. Then you get to page 8, the bottom of page 8, line 18. This is where we exempt them, so they're not subject to criminal penalties for having the hemp extract in the first place. And then there's conditions there. Possesses and uses hemp extract only for the treatment of the individual's or minor child's intractable epilepsy, has the proper registration card, and meets the proper percentages of cannabidiol and tetrahydrocannabinol. Please don't ask me to repeat that. Page 9, again, it states that the minor and the parent shall not be subject to penalties. That goes on to page 10 also. This act is effective July 1st. Mr. Chairman, this is really, a life ring that's being thrown out to a number of the parents and the people who suffer from these horrible seizures. Right now, the parents of these kids and the individuals themselves have to travel down to Colorado, and in some cases live in Colorado, in order to get the hemp oil extract for the treatment. The Department of Health estimates that there'll be about 88 eligible people or minors for this, so the application fee will be about $409 each. Again, that money will go to the general fund. And with that, I would like you to call back on the chairman of the Labor and Health Committee to deal with the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I ask the Standing Committee Amendment be read in at this time.
House Bill 32, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy to corrected copy, page 3, line 2.
Yes. Senator
Mr.
Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, Standing Committee Amendment in part was brought to us by the House sponsor of the bill. It has to do with complying with the federal definitions, and the important part is adding to the intractable epilepsy or seizure disorders. Typically, it is written plural. There's a number of things that can cause these seizures. An individual will probably only have one of them, but this is the standard medical terminology here. And I suppose you could call intractable epilepsy itself a seizure disorder, but this makes it clear that the other things that are seizure disorders are potential here. And then Standing Committee Amendment provides the fees will be deposited in the general fund, makes that clear, and adds a provision so that there isn't a transition problem when an individual switches from being a minor to an adult and you need a different card. So that's what the Standing Committee Amendment does. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions about it.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, how is this hemp oil different than the hemp oil I see on the Internet where I can buy it and use it off and at local stores here in Cheyenne even?
I thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. I agree. Any questions on the amendment? Question on the that's been called for. Those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 32, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 32 is passed. Now back on the bill. Senator Burns.
There is a Committee of the Whole amendment, and I think that will partially also answer the question of the good senator from the center part of the state. So I would ask that Committee of the Whole amendment be read in.
House Bill 32, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, to engross copy to corrected copy, page 3, line 1.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 32 and ask for your favorable consideration. This also came to us from the sponsor. Kind of said is that he missed this, that the plan itself is grown at the 5% to 15%. It's in the bill is hard to find. It is a clinical grade, and for the proper proportions of the 30 to 1, we need the 5%. So that's just a little cleanup for the bill for the 5%. Ask for your favorable consideration.
Question being called for. Oh, excuse me. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like just to point out there's a lot of work that went into this. And I'll say this piece of legislation, I had my reservations when we started with it, and it's my next-door neighbor that works on it. Oh, sorry. Apologize. I missed you a minute.
I'll be back.
Oh.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Hastert's Committee of the Whole, a motion of the Committee of the Whole, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 32, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just to finish up and to finish the answer to the good senator from the center part of the state, hemp was a very commonly used plant, and it's a very handy plant. As a matter of fact, George Washington raised hemp. It was used in rope, cloth, soap, all kinds of things. The difference between the hemp oil that you can buy on the internet or in stores is that cannabidiol, whatever that stuff is called, cannabidiol. And the percentage of that is what has the beneficial effect for people who are suffering from these seizure disorders. The hemp oil that you would find in a shop or store comes from the plant and is the same as almond oil or pecan oil or any other oil you would find in those kind of shops. Hemp was used for all kinds of things until the 30s when it was found to be illegal by the federal government, mostly because of pot. But there's all kinds of conspiracy theories that rope factories were in on that, too, because the use of hemp dropped down. It is really an amazing plant. And the other thing I wanted to mention is there are 10 states in which use of hemp oil is legal, and there are, I think, another 15 states where hemp plants are allowed to be grown.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I just had some questions. I wanted to know how this hemp oil is administered. Is it taken orally? Is it subcutaneous, or is it rubbed on as a salve, or how do they get it into their body?
Is most of it is applied orally in drops, are put into the mouth, usually under the tongue.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for the miscue on the amendment. I watched my good colleague across the building work very hard putting this together, and I had my reservations. I wasn't sure. I don't know. What are you doing there? What are you getting into? But after I saw his work, saw the people who had helped a segment of our population that maybe was being missed, opened an opportunity for them. So I apologize to my good colleague. He had put a lot of work into this. This helps that segment that we're trying to reach out and has been missed before. And I'd ask for your favorable support of House Bill 32.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add to that the testimony we had in committee. This bill is extraordinarily well done as to the fundamentals. They're requiring that you get the prescription from this from not just any medical doctor, but a neurologist. There's about 20 of them in the state. They specialize in this kind of thing, and it gives them another tool in their armory. There's a number of drugs and responses of individual, and you can find people for whom the existing approved FDA drugs don't get the job done or have very bad side effects, and they need this tool. The FDA is studying it, but God knows when they'll get that done. And we need to move and not wait on Washington. The Medical Society was in committee, testified strongly in favor of this bill. This isn't some kind of back alley snake oil. This is something that the medical profession needs as a tool to treat some very serious problems. We did have some testimony from the state health officer who is very much in favor of the bill, but was starting to get fancy notions about how much the registry was going to cost. The committee offered to spring for a deck of 5x8 cards in a box, and I think we insulted our state health officer, but who talked then about it has to be HIPAA compliant. I mentioned that just to ask the Appropriations Committee to watch carefully and skeptically for any budget requests in the future from the Health Department over this bill. A very simple registry will meet the requirements of the bill and can be made HIPAA compliant. I suppose we should offer to buy her a lockbox. But in all seriousness, this will not be super expensive, but do watch out for the health department on this one.
Of course, you're being called for. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with favorable recommendation of House Bill 32, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 32 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee to hold beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've all heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Motion carried.
For me. Were you looking for the privilege of the floor?
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
Senator Driscoll.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, please join me in welcoming Lisa McGee, the program director of the Wyoming Outdoor Council, and also the co-chair of the Governor's Task Force on Forestry that we just went through. Thank you.
Anything in your right? We have standing committee reports.
February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President. Your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 214 engrossed, Practice of Law Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, Van Fleteren, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 161, Retirement Account Exemption from Execution, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Kinsey, Van Fleteren. No, or excuse, Senator Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 160, Special Warranty Deeds, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Kinski, Van Fleteren, excuse, Senator Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 146, engrossed, Uniform Trust Code, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Kinski, Van Fleteren, excuse, Senator Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 145, Principal and Income Act Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Kinski, Van Fleteren, excuse, Senator Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 96, Catering Permit Limitation, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Kinski, Van Fleteren, excuse, Senator Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 19th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number three, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 25, Railroad Rolling Stock Tax Exemption Sunset, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, and Peterson, Senator Peterson, Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 11, Engrossed Distance Education Task Force, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, O2, Code, Dockstader, Pappas, and Rafa, Senator Co-Chairman.
Senator Coe?
Was just read in. It does have an appropriations. I'd request it be re-referred to committee number two.
And that was 11?
11.
House, without objection, House Bill 11 is re-referred to committee number two. Appropriations. Senator Christensen.
No. Mr. President, without objection, I ask that the following bill be referred to committee number nine, Minerals. House Bill 151, Governmental Immunity Waiver for Hospital Employees.
I'm going to reject that until you talk to me and show me in first. All right. We have House Bill on first reading. House Joint Resolution number five, first reading.
House Joint Resolution number five, mandatory judicial retirement, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 49, noes 11.
House Joint Resolution number five is assigned to committee number five, or excuse me, committee number two, Appropriations. have it in an old axe. Enrolled Act Number 4, House Bill 14.
House Enrolled Act Number 4 being original House Bill 14, an act relating to municipal courts.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act, House Enrolled Act Number 4, which was original House Bill, original House Bill number 14. I've so signed. Another one. I'll just give you the whole pile. House Enrolled Act number 5, original House Bill number 57.
House Enrolled Act number 5 being original House Bill 57, an act relating to health insurance plans.
I'm about to sign original House Bill 57, Enrolled Act, House Enrolled Act number 5. I've so signed. Enrolled Act, House Enrolled Act number 6, House Bill 19.
House Enrolled Act number 6 being original House Bill number 19, an act relating to public funds.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 6 being original House Bill number 19. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 7.
House Enrolled Act number 7 being original House Bill 67, an act relating to the Wyoming retirement system.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 7 being original House Bill number 67. I've so signed. Enrolled Act, House Enrolled Act number 8.
House Enrolled Act number 8 being original House Bill 20, an act relating to the administration of government.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 8 being original House Bill number 20. I've so signed. Enrolled Act number 9. House Enrolled Act.
House Enrolled Act number 9 being original House Bill 3, an act relating to insurance.
I'm about ready to sign original or House Bill Enrolled Act number 9 being original House Bill number 3. I've so signed. Enrolled Act number 10.
House Enrolled Act number 10 being original House Bill number 70, an act relating to water development projects.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 10 being original House Bill number 70. I've so signed. Enrolled Act number 11, House.
House Enrolled Act number 11 being original House Bill 13, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 11 being original House Bill number 13. I've so signed. House and Rolled Act number 12. No, 14?
No, 12.
12.
House Enrolled Act number 12, being original House Bill 40, and act relating to insurance.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 12, being original House Bill number 40. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 13.
House Enrolled Act number 13, being original House Bill 72, and act relating to pension accounts.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 13, being original House Bill number 72. I've so signed. Enrolled Act number 14, House.
House Enrolled Act number 14, being original House Bill 33, and act relating to workers' compensation.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 14, being original House Bill 33. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 15.
House Enrolled Act number 15, being original House Bill 41, and act relating to professional licensing.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 15, being original House Bill 41. I just signed Enrolled Act number 15 being original House Bill 41. House Enrolled Act number 16.
House Enrolled Act number 16 being original House Bill 47 and act relating to alcoholic beverages.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 16, being original House Bill number 47. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 17.
House Enrolled Act number 17, being original House Bill 86, an act relating to the Board of Cooperative Educational Services.
House Enrolled Act number 17, being original House Bill 86, I'm about ready to sign. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 18.
House Enrolled Act number 18, being original House Bill 49, and act relating to criminal procedure.
I'm about ready to sign. House Enrolled Act number 18 being original House Bill 49. I've so signed. Enrolled Act number 19.
House Enrolled Act number 19 being original House Bill 122 and act relating to workers' compensation.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 19 being original House Bill 122. I'm so signed. Do we have a quorum? Senator Amerika, you need to stand on the floor, please. Thank you. Okay, we're good now. I'm about ready to, House Bill Enrolled Act number 20.
House Enrolled Act number 20 being original House Bill 6, an act relating to taxation and revenue.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 20 being original House Bill number 6. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 21.
House Enrolled Act Number 21 being Original House Bill 5, an act relating to taxation and revenue.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 21 being House Bill Number 5. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 22.
House Enrolled Act Number 22 being Original House Bill Number 60, an act relating to trust companies.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 22 being Original House Bill Number 60. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 23.
House Enrolled Act Number 23 being Original House Bill 115, an act relating to motor vehicles.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 23 being Original House Bill 115. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act 25.
House Enrolled Act Number 25 being Original House Bill 9, an act relating to fuel tax.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 25 being Original House Bill Number 9. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 24.
House Enrolled Act Number 24 being Original House Bill 135, an act relating to game and fish.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 24 being Original House Bill 135. I so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 26.
House Enrolled Act Number 26 being Original House Bill 74, an act relating to motor vehicle registration.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 26 being Original House Bill 74. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 27.
House Enrolled Act Number 27 being Original House Bill 104, an act relating to big and trophy game licenses.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 27 being Original House Bill Number 105. I have so signed. Next item of business is appointment of joint conference committees. Message number 305, which is House Bill Number 22. Do I need to have it read in for conference committee? I don't think I do. Okay. The conference committee for message number 305, which is House Bill 22, Disabled Veteran License Plates, are Senator Meyer, Chairman, Senator Johnson, and Senator Burns. The conference committees for message number 245, which is House Bill Number 73, Development of Educational Standards, is Wasserberger, Chair, Coe, and Bebout. Message number 242, House Joint Resolution Number 3, Free Roaming Wild Horses. The conference committee is Emmerich, Chairman, Dockstader, and Hicks. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand recessed until 1:45.
Messages. Senator Ross.
Mr. President, your Appropriations Committee will grab some food and move into the Appropriations room to hear House Bill 61, which is a referral, Wyoming Chartered Family Trust Company Act, and then House Bill 65, which is the State Employees Group Insurance County Employees.
Senator Von Flatiron.
Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Economic Development, in about 15 minutes up in room S18, House Bill 152, Engrossed Industrial Siting Impact Payments, House Bill 212, Engrossed Workers' Compensation Claim, something, apportionment.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Monday, February 23rd, 8 a.m. in room S1 to consider the following bills. House Engrossed 180, Child Interviews, Neglect and Abuse Cases. House Bill 150, Arrests for Violation of Probation. House Bill 186, Engrossed Human Trafficking, Forfeiture of Property.
Any other messages? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. The Senate shall stand in recess until 2 p.m. Till 1:45, that's what I said.